This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Help me take this mask off.
But you'll die.
Nothing can stop that now. Just for once, let me look on you with my own eyes.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
If only you detached my legs, I wouldn't be in this ridiculous position. Now remember, Chewbacca, you have a responsibility for me, so don't do anything foolish.
What's going on, buddy? You're being put into carbon freeze.
What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me.
The Empire will compensate you if he dies. Put him in!
Hey! Hey! Listen to me! Chewie! Chewie, this won't help me! Hey!
Save your strength. There'll be another time. The princess. You have to take care of her.
You hear me? Huh?
I love you.
I know.
Turn round! Chewbacca, I can't see!
We'll be right back. This is Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9 with Russell Beatty, the creator, the person behind The Empire Strips Back. It's a Star Wars burlesque parody, and it started a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you based now?
Yeah, Sydney.
Described as a show like no other. Are you taking the most well-known characters, I guess, from the Star Wars verse and turning it into something very different, called a parody production of the Star Wars verse? What can you tell us about The Empire Strips Back?
The show is just 2 hours of pure enjoyment. I didn't want to create a show which was going to challenge anyone's view of the world or anything. I just want to create a show which, you know, linked the best things of being an adult with the best things of being a child, you know. And when I say the best things of being a child, I mean, like, you know, something that's going to capture imagination, that, you know, the excitement you have, just for some things that have so much love for these, you know, these pop culture things what we grew up with. We're one of the first generations where it's still okay to be a kid as an adult, still hold on to those things you loved as a child. Combining that with, you know, more adult sensibilities and, you know, creating a sexy, fun show is basically the goal of the production.
Sounds like you're certainly going to achieve that, or you have achieved it. Whereabouts have you, as far as you've been on tour now for most of this first part of the year? Is that right? And right around Oz so far, except for Melbourne?
Yeah, well, we're going to, we still have Sydney, Perth and Melbourne to go. But we have done, like, North Queensland and a lot of regional areas where we never have been to before. That was kind of interesting, and the crowds have been really great. And that's a testament to Star Wars, that, you know, there's fans everywhere. There's this beautiful thing which all links them.
And so what's the response been like from fanboys and fangirls of Star Wars?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Never going to create this show which is going to unify everyone's taste sensibility. But we do have a pretty high hit rate. I'd probably say 90% of the people who come to see our show, who want to see our show, enjoy it immensely. You know, the other 10%, I don't know what I have to do to convince them, but I have to admit we have a pretty high hit rate, because we make fun of the characters without making fun of the characters.
Yeah.
It all comes from a place of love, and we go to very high detail in trying to get the characters and their strengths and weaknesses right for the stage from the film. You know, we don't diverge from the source material too much in that sense.
No, I think that would be probably one of the things that, as a Star Wars fan myself, that would be something that would concern me, was how far is it going to be tasteful enough? I mean, I've watched the promotional video and I love it. I think it's hilarious. Not just that, but it's actually incredibly detailed. You've got some amazing puppet contraptions, so to speak, and tauntauns, and you've got a Jabba the Hutt. How can you go wrong? And it looks just amazing. Fabulous.
Yeah, well, that was the biggest thing, because when we first started this show, it was about 3 years ago, and we did a version of the show. It was only meant to last for 3 nights, and it had a budget of about, you know, $800, and I made most of the costumes out of toys and bits of things I could get from Bunnings. So popular that we kept it going and going and going. Then about a year ago, we did a run of shows, and I said to my business partner, I said, man, I can't do this show anymore. It's not what I... Like, I just kept seeing the faults in the show. Like, costumes weren't as good as I wanted them to. The puppets weren't as good as I wanted them to be.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to keep challenging what we could do with the show and get it closer and closer to the original source material. So I went to the tip one morning. I destroyed all the costumes and props. I forced my business partner. I said, if we want to do the show, we have to rebuild it. Yeah, we spent 6 months rebuilding it from scratch, and I brought in a lot of people who had worked on Star Wars films, who were part of some pretty big productions in the past, and I just said to him, I said, okay, we need to make these things that only exist usually as puppets or dot motion or CGI, and we need to make them be real on stage. So it's a challenge. And also, you know, the logistics of touring a show, you know, actually having a almost four meter long Jabba the Hutt, you know, touring that around the country. it's actually, those are the challenges what you're faced with. It's one thing having these props, it's another thing actually making them.
Well, what's it made out of? What's the Jabba the Hutt made out of, the material?
Well, it's a mixture, because he has his base, and that's the thing, you don't count it. Yeah, we'll make a Jabba the Hutt, and then, so his base is wood and steel, and then that's almost 4 metres. And then you've got Jabba himself is inflatable, and then he's got a steel skeleton inside, because Leia has to climb all over him, slave Leia. But then he's got two puppeteers inside, which control his arms, his tongue, in his eyes. He moves just as much as the Jabba from the movie.
I mean, it just looks tremendous, the work that's gone into the effort. So you really pretty much started again from scratch. And just query, if I'm wrong, was it Wicked of Oz that helped you with...
Yeah, well, so what happened after Star Wars, I went to my other passion soon after, which is a Batman show. I did this Batman vaudeville show, and that one was all period. And I know a lot about, you know, my favourite era is 1920s, and this was a Batman show, Batman Follies in 1929. I spoiled myself there because I got some amazing costumes made because Star Wars was fairly successful. I had a little bit more budget to play and put in the Batman, and I got so spoiled there because anything I wanted, to a degree, in costumes, I got made. So we got all these period beautiful costumes made and all these three-piece suits, and, you know, when you start getting down to nitty-gritty of, like, creating the Joker suit and getting a, you know, designer suit made in that kind of purple with, you know, bright orange inlay and things like that, you start getting excited and you start just appreciating having the quality in the production. And that's what spoiled me. But then I went on to, did a Bieber Wizard of Oz. And that Wizard of Oz was combined with a fashion label, the story of a fashion label from the 1960s and 70s. I combined those two ideas, but that was even more crazy because we did a Wizard of Oz themed, like, costumes with colours and whatnot, but combined them with this fashion label. So all the cuts had to be versions of this fashion label from the 60s and 70s. You can't just go out and simply buy these dresses anymore.
Yeah.
They don't exist. And I bought one. I bought one as a reference, and that cost me $800.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, okay, I can't do these vintage ones. So we went to great efforts to research all that and spent 6 months researching the cuts and the clothes, the fabrics and everything, and making those costumes. Same when we did the Game of Thrones burlesque show. We had to match the show one for one, and that was... Nothing exists out there for that yet because it's still quite an early franchise. So there's no people out there who have experience making this stuff that much. We had to make everything from scratch. I had to bring in a lot of prosthetic people to create some of the costumes. We had to bring in leather workers, armor workers, blacksmiths to create those costumes. So that was again a new level. And after that, after all those shows, I was ready to go back to the source, which is Star Wars for me. With a whole new skill set, a whole new look at it, and a whole new team where we could actually create stuff which I thought would do justice to Star Wars and the universe, what it is.
You can see the authenticity in it, and that's obviously a genuine passion, or you're totally crazy. So
it's an equal measure of both.
Yeah, look, that's fantastic. The other question is, of course, and I guess a lot of fans and a lot of our listeners will be wondering, how on earth you got... Well, you were able to do this as far as copyright and all of that. What was that like?
Basically, in Australia and the US and Canada, we're very lucky. The people in the UK and New Zealand, unfortunately, will never get to see the show. We have very good fair use laws as far as media, like under parody.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go and do a Star Wars show. You know, it has to be a genuine parody production. And it's burlesque satire in itself. But we also I don't think we take anything away from the brand as well. So, you know, when you look at something like the Game of Thrones show, we actually got heard from HBO in the first week we had on the sale, the lawyers from HBO. They were contacted us, and they were cool with it. They just asked, could we change a couple of things? Then we've actually had a really good relationship with them. They've come and seen the show, and, you know, they enjoy it. And, like, we have a feeling that, you know, Disney and Lucas with the show, because we do treat it with so much love, and it is, you know, by fans, for fans. I think they, again, embrace it as well, just this expanded phenomena or cultural identity, which is Star Wars. There's also that. But, yeah, as far as the legal point of view, in Australia, at their use for media, more than appropriate to cover that.
Oh, that's a shame about New Zealand. Oh. Very odd.
Yeah, we're looking at trying to do a tour to New Zealand. Mm. They don't have the same media laws as we do. But.
Oh, okay. Damn. They'll be missing out. Oh, that's a shame. Oh, well. What about Tasmania? They count, though, don't they? They're still part of Australia. So.
Yeah, it's still part of Australia. Just trying to line it up. Because this show I've designed so it can only be done in theatres.
Oh.
So I get a lot of people online saying, come to this place, come to this place, come to this place. I'm like, I want to. But it's more effective lining up a tour, like the theatres in each of these towns. So, like, these towns only have one theatre what would be suitable most of the
time. Okay.
Or a performance centre. And they're usually booked up year round.
Okay, so you have to have it done in a theatre, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is that part of the deal?
Basically, we like everyone being able to see the show and see it and have good seats.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we need a theatre with
fly system?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, we take all our own lighting. So we take 60 moving lights with us. It's all part of the experience. And we don't want to put on a show for an audience which is substandard to what we usually do.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So we try and hit as many places as we can. Mm. Brisbane's really hard. We get a lot of people in Brisbane asking us to come there, and we try, but it's just, you know, you've got one theatre what's kind of suitable. So, yeah, we're going to eventually get up there, but, yeah, we ask people to please meet the pathway.
It's interesting, actually. So, because I was wondering, I was just curious myself, because there's so few venues, I was thinking, oh, I know this is exclusive, but if only you could have more shows. Is that why the Palais Theatre is the only one you've chosen, or the only one that was suitable?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's also,
for Melbourne?
Melbourne has a lot of venues. They're booked up.
Okay.
It's hard for me to come in for only a couple of nights when you've got King Kong and The Lion King and all these other shows will book out theatres for 6 months, you know? Yeah, and that's the hard thing. And then also, this particular show is designed to be seen by a lot of people, and it's an expensive production amount. We try and come in for, you know, my ideal situation would do 3 shows in Melbourne at something like somewhere like Playhouse. And that's what I've got for a show later in this year for Game of Thrones.
Mm.
But I'm very excited about the Palais, because I always thought about Palais in the back of my head. I'm like, well, it's a little bit too big. And then I said, you know what, let's just do it. And I'm very excited. I'm very excited for that show. It's the last show on lineup.
Yes, it is too.
On the tour. And it's like just the whole thing of, I went down there to check out the venue the other week, and just being on the beach and having Luna Park next door, and I just think it's going to be an extremely fun day.
Oh.
I'm looking forward to that. If we could get, you know, if we could sell out or even get close to, the energy on the night's going to be, you won't be able to contain it. It's going to blow the roof off.
Wow. I mean, yeah, again, just seeing what I've seen online and the artwork and the photographs and your Facebook page, I'm impressed and very excited as well. So I'm hoping that a lot of fanboys and fangirls and just everyone comes along and sees it. It's just great. Now, as far as, I don't know if it's a storyline or how you work it, did you put that part of it together as well?
Yeah, so basically the way it works, I create all the acts and everything. I design all the costumes and everything. Oh, well, what I want. And then I go to my team, and then we build the show from there. But we don't follow a narrative with the show.
Okay.
This show's linked together like a vaudeville or cabaret format, where we have an MC who links different characters and everything. Because the characters are so well known. Yeah, the characters are so well known. The scenes are so well known. We just kind of recreate those. And sometimes we put characters in ridiculous situations which have nothing to do with anything. But based on who they are,
it
becomes humorous in a sense.
Now, excellent. So for you, what's a favourite out of the show? I don't want to be too unfair, but do you have a favourite part of the show?
Yeah, yes and no. I always say to people, whatever my new toy is usually my favourite part. Because, you know, I get like, you know, Tontons arrive 1 week, or a land speeder arrive the next week, or something like that. So they always become my new favourite. The whole show is definitely up there, like, as far as it's just entertaining. Not one, two acts are the same. It's just not, you know, there are acts which are sexy, there are acts that are beautiful, there are acts that are funny, there are acts, you know, just what a nut. But I'd say probably our encore, if I had to get down to the nitty gritty, would be the thing I enjoy the most in the show, because everyone's on stage. It's like our chance to do a, you know, School of Stedford kind of thing, you know, where everyone comes out and it's just meant to leave everyone on a high.
Well, certainly on spinning off. And you've got a carbonite Han Solo. That's massive. That's pretty amazing. Real carbonite?
Yeah, well, it's fiberglass, so we call it carbonite. But, yeah, we got so many props. It's ridiculous. I had to get a warehouse to accommodate.
Oh, no.
So it's pretty nuts.
What about next year? Are you guys planning to take it around the country again, or any changes or something new?
Well, maybe. We're in the talks of sending it over to the US later this year. So this will be your last chance for a while to see the Empire Strikes Back. Later in the year, we'll be bringing down Danes of Thrones to Melbourne, which is Game of Thrones ballet show.
Mm-hmm.
And early next year, we'll be probably bringing our Ghostbusters show, which is our Ghostbusters ballet show.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So that'll be for 2015, two. Okay.
Well, no, Danes of Thrones will be probably around about August, to tell you the truth.
Oh, okay. That's August.
Bam, bam. Yeah.
Dames of Thrones. How did HBO feel about that? Parody again, I guess.
Again, they were fine with it. we first called it Game of Thrones Burlesque, and then they said, could you change the name a bit? And we changed it to Dames. Mm. And I said, yep, that's fine. And, yeah, we've had some of the producers come to see the show. Foxtel has hired us this year to do their launch of Season 4. Warner Brothers have hired our costumes for the DVD launch, you know, so...
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
That's really interesting.
You get embraced a bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they know that you're fans, and well, you are a fan. And is that a prerequisite for some of the performers too? Do they have to be a fan? Do you grill them about their knowledge of Star Wars, or is that not necessary?
In an ideal world, I'd like to say all of them are fans, but I'm not going to lie.
They become them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I put some of the younger girls in time out because they can't answer my questions right. When I quiz them on Star Wars, I'm like, you're not allowed to talk for the rest of the trip. So. But a lot of the girls know so much about Star Wars that it'll put some more hardcore fans to shame. Just purely for the fact that they know their work, you know. So,
yeah.
They know the characters, they know what the characters are meant to represent, they know their relationship with other characters.
Mm.
But I'd probably say it's about 60% fans in the show, 40% fans in training. We're grilling them to make sure they, you know, they're getting there.
They'll get it. They'll get the Force eventually.
Yeah, I hope so.
Oh, well, I like the idea of the Force is strong with them or something will set people's hearts racing.
No, the Force will get people's hearts racing.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good. For the grown-ups, of course. All for grown-ups.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. A while ago, I just came to a realization that a lot of stuff getting made these days is getting made for everybody. And when you're making something for everybody, you're really making it for nobody. You know, like I went and saw the RoboCop remake the other week, and that was something I loved when I was a kid. I loved seeing that. And that was an R-rated movie being marketed to kids back in the 80s, which I don't know if it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But, but thing is, I went and saw it, and you can obviously see they've made it with a PG thing in mind, and they took out everything I loved about it.
Dilutes it, yeah.
Yeah, it dilutes it. I just wanted to create something which is a safe, you know, it's not gratuitous by no means when I say it's an adult-themed show, but it's for people who are adults. They can vote, they can drink, they can swear, they don't have to, you know, they don't have to worry about those things. They can make decisions and, you know, take on this humour without, you know, feeling guilty, you know, it's blue humour. I want to create a safe environment for that where this show is an adult show without it just sounding gratuitous. Where, you know, and that's the thing I find with most stuff being made these days, is it's just getting made for everybody.
Yeah.
Very, very rarely it works. I'll just say solutions are the Lego movie and the Muppets movie from last year. Those two examples were really good examples of it working for everybody. But a lot of times it's a really tricky thing. We have to be careful because May 4th we were out yesterday, and we have very sexy versions of the costumes out. And we had some of our girls for promotions going out, and you know, for May 4th, and little kids just fall in love with them and want to come up and find out who they are and try and take a flyer and everything.
Mm.
We're trying to tell the parents to say, oh, no, this show's not for you.
Still, yeah, that puts into question the whole thing of making it for everybody and then you miss out, then people, other niches miss out, and it's all about including everyone. But, you've got to do it in a different way. So I think congratulations. It's looking fantastic. It sounds amazing. And just watching what I've seen online just blows me away. And the effort, the creativity, and the daringness, it's just fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Well, Russell, I'll let you go. But thank you so much for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream. Russell S. Beatty, presenting The Empire Strips Back.
If you want to head off to theempirestripsback.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram, and that will give you all the updates and information you'll need for the upcoming tour.
Yeah, and if you're in Melbourne town, are you going to be here when? Friday 20th of June?
Yeah, Friday 20th of June at the Palais in St Kilda. Strongly recommend you come on down, have the most amazing show we can possibly do.
Exactly. Oh, cool. All right. Now, can people expect an X-Wing floating overhead or anything like that out of a bog, or maybe not quite?
No. I've tried to bring a lot of the creatures to life and some of the vehicles, but yeah, the ones that actually fly are a little bit out of my range, unfortunately.
But it sounds like it could get bigger one day.
Oh, it gets, yeah. Yeah, it gets bigger and bigger each time I do a show, so I don't... I have no doubt it's going to get so big that I can't even tour it anymore.
Thanks again, Russell. Thanks for speaking
to
us.
No problem.
Here comes a candle to light you to bed, and here comes a chopper to chop off your head. Good night, folks, and if you're not decapitated, remember to tune in next time for Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.